You're listening to the Photobomb podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Photobomb podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me, as always, is Gary Hughes.
Hello.
And we are broadcasting live from Imaging USA today.
Well, we're pre-recorded live,
but live on tape. Right, but we're live. We're at Imaging USA.
We're in my hotel room at Imaging USA. Yes, we're not like out on the trade show floor. We're in my small hotel room and with no chairs.
Very glamorous in Nashville, Tennessee. Very cold. And before we talk about the convention, because that's what we're going to talk about today, because we're here and it's very exciting, we have to talk about the giant elephant in the room and the giant news of what happened this week in one of our lives. So I'm going to count to three, and then I want you to just go ahead. We'll say it together. I want you to say what happened, okay?
We got to say it at the same time?
We'll say it at the same time.
What if we say it differently?
It's the big news. There's only one thing that has happened this big.
Okay.
All right, you ready?
Ready.
So, three, two, one.
I switched to Geico.
the joke doesn't work if we both do it. You were supposed to say what really happened, and I was supposed to be the idiot who said we got a haircut.
I saved 15% of my car insurance by switching. No, my wife Julie had the baby.
That's right. Your wife Julie had a baby, a little girl. What's her name?
Eleanor.
Yeah. Eleanor. And is there a history to the name? Or is there just you just like it?
No, it just sounds fancy. I'm hoping she'll be rich. It sounds like a rich lady's name.
I just occurred to me. I hadn't thought about it when you first told me, but then immediately I started thinking. What was it? Hermits, the old song. Eleanor G, I think you're swell.
I'm thinking Eleanor Rigby.
Oh, well, that's just depressing, that song.
It is kind of a depressing song.
Great song.
Great, yeah, awesome.
And you guys call her Ellie.
Ellie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And first impressions, how has your life immediately changed since becoming a father?
I am so much more concerned about poop than I used to be. Like, poop becomes, when you have a newborn, poop is your primary preoccupation. Mm-hmm. What color is it? How much is it? How often are they happening?
Has there been poop? Has there been poop today?
Make sure. We have an app that measures how, because we are not breastfeeding. She's breastfeeding.
Yes.
But we have an app that you put in like which breast that you're feeding the baby on and for how long and then how much they eat and how much they poop. And it's all into the app and what color the poop is. And it basically, I don't know if it's like, if the poop's the wrong color, does the app alert you and go, your baby's sick, take him to a doctor? I don't know, man.
Poop alert?
It's a wrong color poop alert. But yeah.
I'm laughing, but it really doesn't surprise me at all. Of course there's an app that does it. There's an app that does everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, really cool. I mean, and it gives you, as a new parent who basically has no idea what you're doing, it makes you feel like you're taking control of the situation a little bit, you know, like you're being proactive. So not only is it good information, but then, like, you go to the pediatrician with the baby and you say, I've got all the feeding schedule, I've got the poop schedule, because they give you a spreadsheet to take home where you have to, they actually want you to track the poop.
Yes.
And so
it's very important.
Poop?
You know, like when you're a grown-up, they won't let you leave the hospital until you fart.
Is that a shut up?
Yeah.
What?
No. Have you never had surgery?
No.
Okay. If you go in the hospital, I'm not exaggerating. If you go in the hospital and they cut your abdomen, right? I don't care what it's for. If you're getting your gallbladder out or you're having a baby or whatever, they do not let you leave the hospital until you pass gas.
I had no idea.
Yes, because they're worried about like a kinkage or a blockage or something in your system, and they need you to pass gas so they know everything's working good, and then you can leave. So if you don't fart, you don't leave. Honest to God, right? You're laughing, but right now there's people right now listening to podcasts going, that's right, they wouldn't let me leave. Yes, she's like in a catcher's position.
You have a nurse dedicated to checking whether or not.
She's in a catcher's position. She's got like a hazmat suit on. She's poised, waiting to check to see. No, they take your word for it.
What's your specialty? Oh, flatulence.
Yes, I'm a flatulence expert.
Flatulence nurse.
No, they check. They'll come in. They're like, have you passed gas yet? Because you can't go home until you pass gas. And I'm not kidding. And then, you know, and then you have to tell them, yes, I did pass gas today.
It's much different than my situation, because if I pass gas in my home, Julie kicks me out.
That's right.
So that's actually...
Well, it's the same. You get to leave. Once you pass gas, you get to leave.
But at the hospital, you go home after you pass gas.
Yes.
Why are we still talking about this?
You go to Chili's and watch the rest of the game there. That's where you go.
So, Imaging USA. Here's something cool that happened at Imaging USA.
All right.
Boo Ray Perry. Do you know him?
Yes.
His program was standing room only today. There was like, I think there was it close to 1,000 people in your class.
Oh, that's an exaggeration. No. You did a count. You were there because you introduced
me. The room was seated for 800.
Okay, so it was 800. There were not 200 people standing in
there. There were a lot, but there was not a seat to be had.
Although they did make my wife move, which I thought was funny. She was like, they made her move. Like, you can't stand there. That's a fire hazard. You have to move. And she was like, I'm with the band. Can't I stand here?
I'm having sex with the lead singer.
That's right. I have all access pass. But, because that was my biggest concern. Speaking at Imaging USA the first time, many people would want a small crowd, but I actually wanted a big crowd. Just because for a bunch of reasons, one of which is, you know, I'm a sponsored speaker, and so I want my sponsor to get their money's worth. You know, I don't want them to be like, well, we sponsored that guy and only 20 people came to see him. You know, I want it to be a big crowd, and I like a big crowd, and I think it's easier to work with a big crowd actually than a smaller crowd. And I was just blown away because 8 a.m. the day after the Super Bowl, you know, it's anybody's. I had several people tweeting me going, hey, good luck, I'm not going to be there. I'm the other side. I'm going to be there at 1 o'clock in the morning, and they're like, woohoo. Not going to be at your thing. Have fun.
But bless your heart. Have a great class.
Yes, have a great class. Thank you for the support.
Because we are in Nashville, Tennessee. And when people are going to break bad news to you, or they think they're going to talk crap about you, they start by saying, oh, bless your heart.
Bless your heart.
Bless your heart.
Bless your heart. Because if you say bless your heart, you can say anything.
Absolutely. It's almost like, I'm not trying to be racist, and then you say something
it's
racist.
Incredibly racist. Incredibly. Nothing ever starts with I'm not a racist that doesn't end up being incredibly racist.
Yeah, so that's the bless your heart thing. But I was not able to be in your class.
I was there
when I introduced you.
Yes.
And I was there when the class started, and I had to go do some other stuff.
Yeah.
And the class wasn't yet full. And what I thought was really cool, I jumped back in the middle of your program for like a minute, and I went over and I stood by Bobby, and I saw you up on stage, and like, you had the whole room, like, just everybody was just eating it up, and it was awesome. I don't know whether or not they liked your information, but you certainly were charismatic.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. Yeah.
No, but it was really, really awesome. I was really excited for you, and I think that's really, really cool.
Well, I say it in my program that it's better to be liked than it is to be good.
As a photographer, that's 100% true. Uncle Steve is a photographer. Or, well, he's 87 now, so he's retired.
So he's a dead photographer.
No, he's not dead. Okay. Jesus.
Bless his heart. He's not dead. Bless his heart.
No, but he's a photographer, and he worked until he was probably like 82, 83.
Right.
He's just shooting little beach weddings and stuff. But he was never... and, you know, I don't mean this negatively, but he was never a great photographer.
Bless his heart. He was never a great photographer.
He was never, nobody's ever going to know his name. Nobody's ever going to recognize his work. But he had a really successful career as a photographer because his greatest skill was getting expression, relating to people, people would remember him. I remember my mom is also a photographer, and she got in photography because of
my dad. For those of you who don't know, Gary is part of a dynasty, right? He really is.
He's like Duck Dynasty.
Like the Kennedys. Yeah. Yeah, that's Gary.
The Kennedys and wife beaters.
Yeah.
The thing is that my mom got into photography because of my dad, and my dad got into photography because of my Uncle Steve. Way back in England in like the 60s, my dad got into photography and came over, started his business here. Long story short, my mom was learning one of the first weddings that she shot. She went with my Uncle Steve as his second shooter. And so... Uncle Steve left the wedding. This is how big his personality is. He left the wedding after the ceremony, got everything to reception. He says to my mom, he goes, all right, you can handle this. I'll see you later. And he set the camera for basically on like, this is an old medium format, you know, Mamiya or Bronica probably. And he goes, all right, I'll see you later. And so he left, and he wasn't there for half the wedding. And at the follow-up, where they were picking their pictures for their album and stuff, the bride was like, oh, man, Steve was so great.
And he did
the best reception pictures. And oh, my gosh, we had so much fun with him at the reception, and he wasn't even there.
Wow.
Like, that's – and the thing is, he had a great career because not only can you – you want your clients to like you, but you want to be able to interact with people because you can sell, a photograph of inferior technical quality if the expression's badass.
Right.
If the expression's awesome, if people like the way they look in it, and if they had fun while they were making the image,
then you
can sell that.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to be great, because your average person can't tell the difference between photography and great photography.
If you had bothered to come to my program today, you would have heard me speak to that very point.
Oh my God,
Gary, Greg had to go to a meeting because you're like a bigwig in the PPA.
How long are you going to kick that horse?
And you had to go to a meeting. I understand. I'm just saying that tomorrow morning, when you look out and see me there at your program the entire day, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. But you're right. I say that in that I think so many people are so focused when they become photographers. They're like, oh, I need to learn this special off-camera lighting. All this dynamic, creative, really lighting, technical stuff. And I'm like, first, learn how to just get people to relax with you and get the expression and get the moment, because the technical stuff, anyone can learn that. I think it's harder to be able to envision a picture and then see it and go, okay, this needs to be horizontal and they need to be here and the tree needs to be there, and then figuring out how to light it. Anyone can learn that. It's that stuff that's hard. That's harder to learn, I think. Some people have it naturally. My wife, for example, it comes to her naturally, and I'm like, if you would let me teach you how to use a camera, you'd be better than me, because I have to work hard at seeing a scene and going, okay, where should I put them and how should I put them to get this, and then how do I get them to react the way I want? Whereas she just instantly goes, well, this is the best place for a picture right here. And I'm like, but you please pick up a camera, you know, because I struggle work constantly to learn that.
How is
and
she going to judge you from a distance if she's just a shooter? You know?
Oh, she'll figure it out. Bless her heart.
Bless her heart. She is the funny one.
She is the funny one. Yeah. She'll tell you she's the funny one. Okay, so here's the other thing I think is so, you know, great about this whole thing is I'm coming here to speak at Imaging USA. It's a big deal to speak at Imaging USA. I'm very excited about it. You're going to be here. We're like, great, we're going to podcast. And then PPA calls you and says, we've had someone drop out of pre-con. And pre-con is when, right before the convention, there's 3 days where there's a lot of hands-on classes.
Smaller classes,
like 20 people. And it's like lighting, and we're gonna have models, and we're going to teach you how to light or whatever. Mm-hmm. And someone dropped out, and we need someone to fill in. So they called you, yes, and they said, would you come teach this pre-con class for us? Which was awesome. You got a new baby. You did it anyway, which, you know, who doesn't want to get out of the house?
Thanks. Now everybody thinks I'm an a-hole.
No, every man with a child is like, oh, I wish somebody had called me the first week the baby was home. I would have taken that in a minute. But you've got support network at home with Julie. So
you've got family nearby.
Yeah, it's not like you're living there, you don't have family there and everybody. And to be honest, she, you know, after giving birth to the child, she probably doesn't want to see you for a while anyway. Yeah. You're the one that made her go through that. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you can just go.
Oh, it's rough, man.
So you come to do the pre-con, mm-hmm, and then they're like, we had a speaker drop out. And they know that you've got, you know, loaded and cocked and ready to go, two or three great programs. So they ask you to speak. Mm-hmm. So now tomorrow morning, same time slot I had today, tomorrow morning you will be speaking as well.
Yes.
And I think it's hilarious that people struggle their whole lives to try and speak at Imaging, and you just, you know, got called 3 days before Imaging, and you're speaking twice.
Well, you know, I do appreciate it, and they really appreciate being, you know, they always have people on backup because – they book the speakers like a year in advance. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes people drop out and because of circumstances that they can't control. But here's the thing. It's an honor and it's great. And yeah, I love doing it. It's very exciting. But I'm going to be doing a program where everybody who walks in the door is expecting someone else. So I'm starting.
Well, no. I mean, they changed you. The app and everything's updated.
My speaker badge is written in Sharpie.
That's right. That's my favorite part.
My name's written in Sharpie on my speaker badge.
If you don't come to Imaging USA, and you should come. We've talked about this before. We'll talk about it again. 12,000 people here, 13,000 people here. It is just a blast.
It's about 11 right now.
Is it 11?
People are still registering.
Well, after I spoke, many of them went home. And so it's a fantastic time.
Because you satisfied them.
If you're a speaker, that'd be the first time. And if you're a speaker, everyone wears a badge. If you're a speaker, you get like a really big badge, and it's a speaker on it, you know.
Kind
and
of
it
has obnoxiously
large. Yeah, it's kind
large,
of obnoxiously man. Large, and your name is printed on there. And Gary's is written like in a crayon because they brought him in so late. It looks like you're not even a speaker. You just found a badge and you're trying to masquerade as a speaker.
Yeah, I've got a couple of looks.
But, I mean, it was all changed in the app and changed in the program. It's changed, you know, so they'll know when they come in the room.
Yeah, but it's the other collateral, the sign outside your class that says who's teaching inside.
Oh, that's right, I guess.
That's going to be saying another photographer's name. And that was the funny thing is for the pre-con class, it was the exact same thing. They didn't have my name or anything on the collateral. So I was teaching. And so, I mean, class is about, I think they cap it at 30. And so we got about 30 people in the class all here to see Ryan Brenneser, who is a phenomenal photographer, really great guy from New York. And he's invented some cool techniques in wedding photography that other people are using. And I would like really be interested to take his class.
Right.
And you got all these people coming in to see Ryan Brenneser. And might I also say that he had a genuine reason why he could not be.
Yes, absolutely.
So I'm sitting there and all these people are like, you're not Ryan Brenneser. And I go, I know.
So, I you know, I can't believe I didn't ask you. Was there any, no one would be rude, but was there any, a little bit of a what, you know?
And, I think they had, they sent out an email as soon as he notified the people that he wasn't going to be coming, as soon as he notified the convention. They sent out an email to the people who were pre-registered for that class and said, we're having a change up of speaker. Speaker can't make it due to, you know, whatever reason. And they gave them the option to drop out or get their money back if they wanted to do that. And I think probably in, there were three different classes, both 2 hours long, back to back, three 2-hour classes.
And that kills me because I didn't realize it worked that way. You have to teach the same class over and over.
Well, it's actually a really cool thing because you pay, I think it's like $169 or somewhere around there. And you get to pick three classes to go to over the course of a day. And so if there's like a posing class or a lighting class or high school seniors or weddings, you pick the, let's say there's 20 classes to choose from. You pick the three that you want to go to. And so from 9 to 11, you go to one. From 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock, you go to the other. And from 4 to 6, you go to another. And the instructors are teaching the same class three times.
Right.
But we, I think a couple of people dropped out. But then you also have people walking up and registering. We have three great classes because a lot of the people that come to these classes are relatively new. And it's actually really cool to see, having been doing it long enough, to see photography and the business of photography through the eyes of someone that's just walking into it. And honestly, it's like looking in a mirror where you see how you started. Because I remember my first Imaging USA was 2009, only 6 years ago. And I had only been in the photography business like a year or two on my own.
Right.
And it was overwhelming. I'm walking around, like blowing around like a leaf in the wind with Julie and I at convention. And eyes open, and everything every speaker said was like a magic trick.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. You're like, oh, wow, these people have got so much knowledge for me.
Right.
You know, because, you know, I'm a cynic at nature. So anyway, I come in, I'm like, nah, whatever, yada, yada. And then I walk out of every room going, hey, wow, you know, that guy's got something for me. You know, I've never seen anybody speak on any topic. I don't care if it's pet photography or it's something I don't even do where there wasn't something where I'm like, ooh. That's okay. I can use that.
Pet photography, speaking of, my favorite class so far has been one of the least attended, and it was Tim Flack, who is, to me, if you Google Tim Flack, FLACH, and look at his work,
he's
one
incredible.
Of those photographers that every single person, not just photographer, everybody has seen his work, but nobody knows that it's his, or nobody really knows his name. He's published several like international best selling books of photography, and he had like 100 people in his class. In a room that seats 800.
Right. And to put it in perspective, I had like 700, and I'm a nobody.
I would say you had 800 and change.
Okay, yeah. So I'm just not to brag. I think it was more like 850. But to give you an idea, at these conventions, just how many people come to these things. And
you have
room,
four or five, six classes going on at the same time.
Right. And they'll be packed. The first one that I saw a thing from Canon on speed lights at events the day before, and they were in one of the big rooms. And it was like, you know, we were in the nosebleed seats. That's how big it was and how many people were there. I mean, there's a lot of people in these rooms.
Some big names.
And Russ gets like 100. Not Russ, I'm sorry, Tim.
Tim Kelly.
Yeah, no, Tim Flack.
Tim Flack. Oh, yes. Yeah, Tim Flack.
You're saying you got like 100.
Well, here's the thing. I think that the very important, if you are someone who gets the opportunity to teach a class at a convention like WPPI or Imaging USA, that you always have to give your class a title. And one of the big mistakes that speakers make is, I've worked as a volunteer at these conventions, and you're always directing people where to go. And they're asking, the biggest question you get asked is, where is the class on weddings? Where is the class on seniors? You never get asked, hardly ever do you get asked, where is Bure Perry's class?
Right, right. People, they're going to whatever the wedding class is for this time slot, that's what I'm going to.
They go to class more based on, unless it's a real big name like your Russ Harringtons or your Peter Licks, God rest his soul. He's not dead. He's just disappeared. You know,
Kenny Rogers last year.
Kenny Rogers.
Yeah. Well, then you'll go see him because, oh, this is going to be because they're the keynote speaker or whatever. Right.
Unless you're a big, big name in the industry and you have a draw, there are a lot of great photographers that aren't huge, huge names, and they do great classes. There's got a perfect example is Rod Evans, who's a high school senior photographer in the Midwest. And he's here. He's taught here a bunch of times. And he always has a full class because he teaches really cool stuff for high school seniors. But anytime I tell anybody about Rod Evans, who's kind of new to conventions and photography, nobody's heard of him, but he teaches awesome stuff. So I would say about the title of your program is really essential at stuff like this, so people know what to go to. So if you name your class like Wedding Photography for Beginners, you're going to have a full room as compared to naming your class concepts for modern weddings or something like that. Right. You know what I mean? Or you, I mean, you really need to just make the title of your class exactly what you're teaching.
Well, it's a little late for me to ask you now, but how would you judge the title that I used?
Which one? What was your title? Weddings? Obviously, Prepare to Succeed.
Prepare to Succeed. Yeah. Because I talk about preparing to teach weddings and succeeding in the future. And I thought it was kind of, I didn't think it was a great title, but I it's hard to come up with a title.
How about weddings? What are they good for?
Bum, bum.
Weddings, don't do it. No,
It wasn't the best title, but
I thought it was on point. Your title had the word weddings in it.
Yes.
Prepare to Succeed.
Yeah, and so I thought having succeed in it, you know, you want people to, they're thinking about, they want to succeed, so that's a key word. I don't know.
Well, the proof's in the pudding. You had a full class.
Yeah. I was really happy with that.
I think because people just look at the program and they go, I'm here to learn about wedding. One of the things that
I do
when I come, as someone who does a lot of teaching and also goes to a lot of workshops and conventions, and I like to learn, I like to continue to learn. When I go, somebody asked me, how do I pick what class I go to? A friend of mine, Kelly Canova from Orlando, and she, I ran into her on the trade show floor, and she's like, we're talking about what classes to go to. And I said, I look at my business and I look at my work, and I look at where I'm feeling depleted, because sometimes I'm feeling uninspired about the photos that I'm taking.
Right.
So then I'm going to go more to the inspiration track. I want to get like shaken up about creating new kinds of work and
recharge your batteries.
Right. Or if I'm struggling with bookings, or if I'm like feeling stagnant in a particular area, or if I'm looking to move into a new market, maybe doing headshots or high school seniors or something, then I'll go to those classes. And I think most people have a sort of one way or another, they're making the decision in a similar fashion.
Right.
And I don't think that, I mean, there's 100 speakers here. There's no way you're going to know even 10% of the names on the list of speakers. So you're going to pick based on the topic.
Sure.
And I think that obviously your title worked.
Yeah. It was great. It was a great experience. And I highly recommend it to anybody, unless you're just terribly, terribly shy. Speaking, I mean, but any level, I mean, people come up to me and talk to me. I go talk to 20 people in Ocala. And it's still very satisfying.
Ocala.
There too. I've spoken in both of those places. And when you're finished and everyone comes up and talks to you and tells you, oh, we really enjoyed it, and they ask you questions, and it's obvious they paid attention. And it's very satisfying. I don't know. I guess it's not for everybody to speak, but for me, it's absolutely more satisfying than the photography, I think, really.
Yeah, the networking aspect is always really awesome.
Unbelievable. When I walked out, I looked down and I had 26 new Facebook friend requests.
That is awesome. Well, of course, your name is pretty memorable because unless you're from like Cajun country, Bure isn't super common.
And I met someone who graduated from my high school in Louisiana.
And I also found out that your wife and I are from the same fishing village in Florida.
That's right. So it's been a magical weekend.
It's in the words of a famous musician, reaching out, touching hands, touching me. Touching you. It's just been magical. I want to talk about...
You know what song? Let me sidetrack you here.
Okay.
What is that song right now? They're playing it at every wedding, and it's I Love You All the Way or More to Death or I Love All of You. What's I Love,
All
of You, Me Loves All of You. That sounds like something that that Elmo would write.
Yeah.
Me Loves All of You. And the letter today is R. And it is so popular, and it's at every wedding, and I cannot stand it.
Would Elmo be the bride or the groom?
I don't know. I think Elmo's a boy.
Yeah, I guess so.
But still,
is he gender ambiguous?
It's so lame. All of me loves all. It's like a song.
The lyrics don't even matter, bro.
If you were watching a movie about a guy who was a terrible failed songwriter, that would be like the song he wrote.
What was that movie with the Australian? It was an Australian movie about the band, and the whole time they're trying to make it big. I think it was called Garage Days or something like
that.
No
idea.
Yeah, it's called Garage Days, and it's this Australian band, right? And they're just like a low-level working band. They play bars, they play clubs, they play all these different things. And cleverly, the movie was made so that you never actually see the band play any music throughout the whole thing. And so in your mind, you assume that they're awesome and they deserve success.
Right.
And so they pull this caper and like sneak their way onto stage at a huge music festival. And then the line before they play every time, the guy gets up to the mic and he goes, "This one's a killer opener," you know, like,
right.
And you never get to hear the song.
But you're expecting that, you know, this is going to be their break and everything.
And they suck.
And then you're like, and you've been invested in them the whole time. You've Absolutely. Been invested in them, and then you find out, oh my God, they just suck.
That's and I think, and spoiler alert, this movie came out like 15 years ago. So
that sounds good.
They end up just playing at bars again because they realize, hey, you know, we have fun doing music, but we're not really going to make it big because we suck. But
how's the trade show this year? You've been to this a lot.
I did. I've been working more with the PPA Charities booth, which is PPA Charities is they basically, it's a fundraising organization, and then they give the money to Operation Smile.
Right.
And this year also Dondo Amore, which is a charity started by a PPA member named Travis Googleman. And he basically collects shoes and gives them to Haitian people.
Okay.
Because apparently, and I didn't know this, they have some kind of a shoe shortage. There's so much poverty and destitution, especially right. since the earthquake, that shoes are a big deal. And people like you and me, I was just thinking about this. In my closet, I have probably 7 or 8 pairs of old shoes I never wear.
Right.
But to somebody like that, those shoes would be... like, they'd be amazing. They'd
right.
be like a brand new pair of shoes to them. And I'm thinking, yeah, well, you know, it's kind of they're stretched out a little bit and the laces are, and they would be like,
oh my God.
Yeah, they'd be Air Jordans to some kid who really
right.
needed them. And so, so PPA Charities fundraises and Operation Smile also sends plastic surgeons to third world countries and they repair cleft palates.
Right.
And so the money.
And they're like, I mean, that's the PPA charity, but I mean, I had heard of Operation Smile long before I joined PPA. That's
right.
been around for a long time. It's a big deal.
Well, they fundraise, and that's the charity that PPA Charities works with the most. And
right.
I think this is the first year in a little while that we have a different charity. So it's both charities are being supported by PPA mm-hmm. Charities. And so we're having a $35,000 Dream Studio giveaway, and they're selling tickets. So I've been sort of hawking tickets at the trade show. I haven't even really had the chance to look at anything.
I would like to buy a ticket. I don't have a ticket.
It's $20.
Oh, that's... I'm going to buy several.
They're doing the drawing tomorrow.
Okay, so it's not too late?
So by the time this podcast airs, it will have been way over. So it's
I heard somebody... Also, they had added, though, that it wasn't just a studio. And maybe that they're actually going to set it up?
Yeah, it's a bunch... It's lighting modifiers, lights, computers, software, cameras, lenses, everything that you need for a whole like
wow.
studio makeover, and all those items are donated by vendors from that work with
that's
PPA.
Fantastic.
So you know, you've got soft boxes and software, you know, Photoshop and all kinds of different stuff that's and everything's donated, and it's this big bundle of amazing stuff, and it's still being added to. So at any rate, it's a great fundraising organization, but I haven't had the chance to go on the trade show yet. But I did hear about a really cool piece of software, and it's called Something Perfect. I'll look that up real quick. And essentially what it does multi-face recognition and retouching. So you know how like Portrait Professional will retouch a face automatically. You tell it where the
yeah,
eyes are and
right.
the lips, and it retouches
right.
it. This does it. It'll batch process with either Lightroom or Photoshop, and it'll take a picture, and it'll find all the faces, and it will retouch all the faces, and it knows where the teeth are, and it knows where the eyes are. And it'll... adjust for skin tone, so it can tell if somebody's African American or Asian or whatever, you know.
And this is in the trade show.
Yeah, and they got right. a show special. I think it's for like $160.
I'm gonna go check that out.
Yeah, we'll
be down there shopping in a few minutes.
Yeah, I'm gonna find out what that's called for you. But yeah, something like that to me. I always spend a little money in the trade show because I want to support the vendors that support these great conventions. Then without the vendors, there would be no conventions.
Right. Yeah, I save like when I can because I'm terrible about it. If I need something, I walk straight to the computer and I order it. Done. You know, out of sight, out of mind, and I get it. But when I know
you are an Amazon junkie,
I am. I've been like a Prime member since day one. And but when I know the trade shows are coming up, I just make a list. You know, I need this little thing from this company and this little thing and that little thing. And then I buy them here because I want to get the vendors. I want to give them money here. Because they come and they support us. I mean,
right.
we wouldn't have these conventions without the vendors.
Yep.
So, you know, if you need something, wait until you come here and buy it from the vendors so that it's worthwhile to them and they want to come back. Speaking of vendors, I got a text today from a friend of mine. Used to work with me. Was an assistant. She's in Ohio. And she said, hey, you know, she couldn't come this year. And she said, but I heard that my lab has used a couple of our pictures in the display, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, oh. She's like, would you go look? And I'm like, okay. And I'm thinking, you know, whatever. And I go, sure enough, there's one of her pictures in the display. She's not here to see it, but
That's
there it
a
is.
Shame. It's such a cool thing.
Yeah,
to
in
have.
The booth. And then it occurred to me that I'm a speaker at this convention, and my sponsor, Miller's, is one of the largest sponsors in the trade show.
Always.
And there is not a single picture of mine in the Miller's booth.
Are you feeling inadequate?
And I know, because I mean they sponsored me to speak, but at the same time there's like literally 300 pictures in the Miller's booth, and I'm like, you couldn't maybe get one.
Hey, I'm in the same boat, dude. White House, you know, is my lab, and all their speaking team, and I don't know who else, but they sent out an email to people, and they go, hey, we need new images for our trade show booth. And just submit, or we Dropbox. I took probably like 65 of my favorite images I've taken over the last year, and I Dropbox them to them. And last year was the first year that they'd asked us to do this.
Right.
And so I, or at least included me in that email, and I went in, and I was so excited. Julie and I both got an image in there, but mine was like a 8x10.
Yeah, like a little tiny.
It was just like it was a sample of an 8x10 metal print.
Like the bastard stepchild over in the corner.
But I was still super psyched about it, and I took my picture with it. Like I squatted down near the ground doing my picture with it. And Julie's, of course, was bigger, and it was this amazing photo she took of this cathedral in Italy when we were there teaching at a retreat. And but this year, I was walking around. The first thing I did, because the White House booth is right by the door, I went to the White House custom color booth, and I started looking. And, you know, one of the guys that works in the booth, he comes over. I said, don't waste your time on me, man.
Yeah, right.
I'm a client.
That's right.
Talk to somebody who's not a client. And, you know, and so I'm going around, and nothing. Bupkis.
Not a thing.
Bupkis. Not even an 8x10.
And you're speaking twice at this convention.
And I sent them, like, 65 of my favorite images from the last couple of years.
What's sad is how extremely needy we are.
So needy.
Will there ever be a point when we are finally have validated ourselves enough to where we don't need this? I'm not talking about photographers. I'm talking specifically about me and you.
Mm.
Will there ever be a point where we are just so above it and so finally, you know, secure in how good we are, and we don't need recognition and stuff from? Will that ever come, or is it just your entire life you're always, you know, I hope they like me.
Hear from the guy who's with me in my hotel room sitting recording a podcast, because we like to hear ourselves talk
that we
record it every week. And you're
asking let me ask you honestly now, when we first started the podcast, and then you sent me the podcast so I could download them to my phone, you know, like Bluetooth in my car and everything. I want to ask you honestly, how many times have you listened to each of like the first 3 or 4 episodes?
That's an interesting question, because I have
not counting when you had to mix them down.
Because I listened to them quite a lot when I was editing.
Right.
But I have listened to them when you're doing audio. And you and I are both musicians, and I used to work professionally as a musician.
Well, that's a loose term with me. I play the guitar, but I wouldn't necessarily say I'm a musician.
And the ukulele.
Yes, which more proof that I'm not a musician.
All right. Hey, what do you call somebody who hangs out with musicians?
I don't know.
A drummer. All right, good one. See, you don't get a rim shot on that joke because you just made fun of the drummer.
That's right.
But I probably listen to each episode 2 or 3 times after everyone posts up, because I listen to it in my car.
Right.
Because we make adjustments on the audio as we record, just because then, you know, like one of the episodes, it's like maybe I'm too loud or you're too loud.
Right.
Or one of us sounds a little tinny, and so we adjust the mixer board the next time we record. So I listen to them on my computer. I listen to them on my headphones on my iPhone, and I listen to them in the car. So about 3 times.
All right, so about 3 times.
And not the whole thing. I usually listen to maybe 15 minutes or so, and that'll sort of get it going.
Still, that's a lot of time devoted to listening to yourself when you were actually there when you recorded it.
And I never get tired of the sound of my own voice. So we are getting towards where we want to start wrapping this up. So
yes,
let's get a couple of take-homes. What would you tell – this is your first time speaking.
Yes.
And you are at a national convention. So you've done a lot around states and stuff like that in smaller groups.
Right.
So your speaking career is relatively new.
I guess. Well, yeah, for 2 years. I started summer before last.
Well, you've got people here at Imaging who've been speaking for 20 years.
Yes, absolutely.
And so
I ramped up fast, though, because we're lucky. In Florida, we have a lot of guilds.
We have a lot of people.
So I said, I'm gonna start speaking. And literally within 3 months, I had spoken 6 times.
Well, that's, you know, so you got, and obviously you're a natural at engaging people, and you're very entertaining. But if you had something to say to somebody out there who wants to start speaking and teaching again on the speaking circuit. So give them a couple of takeaways to get started.
Okay, well, there's some technical and there's some that are not so technical. Technical is one that you said to me, and I knew this going in because I had been at one the day before, and you mentioned it to me, and which is further proof that it's good. And if you're in a situation where you're mic'd and someone asks you a question, repeat the question so that everyone can hear the question.
That's critical.
Oh, and even if it's a small room, someone up to the left asked you a question. The people on the right didn't hear that question. So here's what they hear. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you don't want to do that. That's not really a good idea. Never do that. That's like death.
Yeah, if someone you do that, you'll go out of business. Yeah,
Someone else have a question? That's what they hear. So repeat the question. But on a broad meta sense,
I don't think you're using that word correctly.
I don't think that means what you think it means.
It does not mean
meta. Is that what meta is? Isn't meta like every link overreaching? Like
meta means Urban Dictionary. I looked it up the other day because I, for the first time, used it successfully in conversation.
Okay.
Because I was like, I think it was a Facebook post. I said something was meta. Meta is when something refers to itself inside of it. So, for example, a picture of someone inside a picture would be kind
that
of
would
meta.
Be meta.
Right. Something like that. So it's something that's self-referential.
So I am using it wrong.
Yeah.
Let's get that clip. My microphone is slowly creeping down, so now I'm going to fix it. There you go. All right. So
I didn't mean to call. I'm not the grammar police.
No, it's too late. It's too late, Gary. Thank you very much. Let me ask you a question and then correct your ass when you do it wrong. So it is important. I can't tell you how important it is to be yourself. I think the biggest problem, and this happened in my radio career. Things they used to be that you were supposed to be an announcer, and then the tide turned, and it became, and they realized that people want to listen to somebody who is just genuine and real. And the same thing on the speaking circuit, you can get up and talk, and you can be afraid that you don't have enough viable information. You can be afraid that you're not going to be seen as an expert. You can be afraid of so many things. But if you are just genuine and fun talking to those people the way you would talk to them if you were sitting around the bar having beers, they will like you. They will enjoy you. They will remember you. They will like your material, and that is. Almost every speaker that I've ever heard that I thought, you know, wow, that was great, it was more because I enjoyed listening to them than it was because I felt they gave me really good information. Because I can go get good information in a lot of places. When you came and spoke to our guild, it was one of the first times, you were the first speaker I ever went up to afterwards and shook his hand and said, wow, thanks for coming. And it was because you had good information, but you were just entertaining. You kept my, you know, you don't have to be a clown or anything like that, but you just have to be genuine. Like, we have a friend, Brittany.
Believability is important.
Brittany, what's her name? Brittany Folgath?
Yeah, Brittany Folgath.
Okay, Brittany. Brittany is this Southern woman, and when she speaks, you know, y'all, I don't, you know, when I was learning this, y'all, and she's just, you want to listen to what she's got to say. Even if she's talking about a topic that isn't necessarily yours.
Not just her cute Southern accent,
yes.
But also because she comes across like she's just having a conversation. And yes. There could be 1,000 people in there.
That's right. It's
she's
like
a great teacher.
She's talking to you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what you want to, you know, try and be. So that's, you know, in the meta sense, that's what you want to go for, is you want to be, you know, it's hard. You say people be genuine and they're like, how do I fake that?
Exactly.
And it's not. Just be yourself. Talk the way you would talk if you were sitting around like Gary and I right now, just, you know, shooting the breeze and like, oh, blah, blah, blah. Talk that way to people.
Yeah. I think that one of the best compliments I get sometimes when I speak is when anyone comes up and says, you're so down to earth. Like,
yeah.
You're so relatable.
Exactly.
And that makes people, because there's so much photography education out there, and there have been plenty of people over the years that are giving bad information. You know, and that are trying to sell the dream of a lifestyle that exist. Because professional photography is hard to make a living in, as hard as any other job. Mm-hmm. It's not impossible. It's a great living. But some people will tell you, oh, well, just get a camera, start shooting your friends. And then, you know, in 6 months, you could be a rock star photographer.
Secrets to success. Yeah. We've got them.
And it's so not the way it is, because you're basically, it's a small business with a slow growth curve.
Right.
And if you're honest with people, I actually sometimes feel like I discourage people from getting into professional photography, not because I don't want them in there, because I go, photography is beautiful, and it's an amazing hobby, and it's an amazing profession, and it's an amazing art. But if you're not wanting to be a part of the business of photography,
right.
Go to dental school.
Right.
And
where you've got a built-in clientele. Yeah, everyone needs the dentist.
And shoot photography as your passion.
Yes,
as
do it for fun.
Because sometimes doing something that's your passion for your job can take the joy out of it.
Well, you know, we run across it all the time, that people who are just starting out, and they come to your seminar, and they talk to you, and they're like, do-do-do-do-do, and you go, hey, well, you should try this, and you should try this, and they go, you know, I really don't want to do that. And I'm like, okay, do you want to make a living? I'm not saying you got to do that to make a living. But
you mean you tell them some business advice?
Some business advice, and they'll come back. Once you, they have shot you down on like three or four things in a row, I really don't want to shoot that kind of picture. I really want to do this. And they're more and more narrowing down what they really want to do. And that's when you get to the point you go, you need to be a hobbyist. Because I'm not saying you've got to be able to do everything to be a successful photographer, but I'm saying that when you're first starting out, it's very hard to be like, I want to only take pictures of butterflies on Wednesday and make a living at that.
But there are photographers who monetize their passion.
Yes.
You know, Jim Ferrara is a great example. I saw his program. He loves really close-up headshots. He kind of styled his own lighting. And after working as a union camera operator in New York for years, he said, I want to make a business out of photography. And he did that one thing. And I remember Joel Grimes said this in a class I watched on Creative Live with him months ago. And he said, if you really want to be known for your art as a photographer, as an artist, and monetize what you love to do, find one thing that's your thing that you do. And he's like, just pound the hell out of that nail.
Okay.
And keep pounding that nail doing it.
So let me rephrase that and say, everything I just said was bullshit, and Gary has just corrected me. And apparently, you can focus on the one thing that you want to do.
I'm saying it's possible, but there aren't a lot of people that do it.
No, there aren't.
It's more...
And it's going to be much easier if you build a business, and then you can scale into what you... I think... Then if you pay the bills, and then you know you can. I think it's easier starting out to learn to do more.
Most people build businesses like yours and mine. Like
right.
I'm willing to take pictures of pretty much anything.
Yes.
If I can make money at it.
Yeah.
And that's fine because we have a part of our business that does school and sports. We have a part of our business that does a lot of corporate and commercial work, and then we have weddings and we have actors and entertainers.
Right.
And I don't really like any one of those, especially way better than the other.
Right.
I kind of enjoy all of it. But there's not this thing, this one thing that I do that people know me for. But that looks like a Gary Hughes thing. That's what Gary
right.
Hughes does.
And if you want to do that and you want to go after that, that's great. But it's helpful if you have a spouse who can support you or you've got a lot of money in the bank, because then you can really become an expert at that one thing. And then suddenly that can maybe explode for you and that can become your thing. But I think it's tougher. I think it's a tougher road to hoe.
Guys like Joel Grimes.
I said hoe.
And hoe. Guys like Joel Grimes and Peter Hurley, Jim Ferrara, you know, guys that do their have that thing that they're known for. That's a really great way to be, but it is one way to do it, and I think
right.
they're in the vast minority.
Yeah, I agree.
But if you want to have a real photography business, practically, you have to realize that you're in the business of photography.
Yes,
and again, you don't want to lose your passion for what you do. Your passion.
Yes,
your passion.
Everyone has a passion.
Passion. You don't want passion. Passion. You say like this, you know, like the delicious dish on Saturday Night Live. Hello, welcome to the delicious dish.
No.
Like sweaty balls.
Sweaty balls.
All right.
We have to wrap this thing up.
We are wrapping it up.
Don't forget, please check out the website. Download us on iTunes. Well, you've already downloaded this if you're listening to this, so that's not even good advice.
No, you can be streaming it.
You could be streaming it. You can download it on iTunes. You can download it on Pocket Cast.
Stitcher.
And Stitcher. And we have a website. It is photobombpodcast.com. You can email us at questions@photobombpodcast.com.
Can we read that very centrally? questions@photobombpodcast.com.
I'm not going to do that with you. totally on you.
All right.
You're going to have to do that. You're on your own with a sensual reading of the name.
That's all right. I'll bring it back later on.
You can always find me at BlueRayPerry.com, and you can find Gary at HughesFioretti.com.
Just Hughes Fioretti. Just Google Gary Hughes Photographer.
Yeah, you'll find him. Absolutely. All right. That's it. We will see you back here again 1 week from today. Until
yes.
then, take care.